The Northwest Iowa Symphony Orchestra presents A Mighty Fortress, a spring concert happening Tuesday, April 10th at 7:30 p.m. in the B.J. Hahn Auditorium on the campus of Dort College. That evening's guest artist is pianist Richard Steinbach, the M.A. Martin Everest Foundation Artist in Residence. He is with me today, as is the principal conductor, Christopher Stanichart. Well, this is the grand finale of NYSO's 2017-2018 season, and it's not only celebrating a great season, it's celebrating the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, which is, that's a big anniversary. The highlight of our conversation is going to be Richard's performance of Shostakovich's Second Piano Concerto. We'll just use that as a little tease. And before we get to that, tell me about programming this concert and marking the 500th anniversary of the Reformation.
The Mendelssohn seemed obvious to me, and I wanted to have the chance to program that piece with NYSO. And I thought, especially for the college which hosts us, Dort College, which has an affiliation with the Reformed Church, that has it's a very personal and very important part of the tradition. But also, it is such a great symphony, and no matter what your background is, it speaks so strongly. It's really become my favorite of the Mendelssohn symphonies. About 10 years ago or so, I was accompanying a choir to Leipzig. And have you been to Leipzig?
I have not.
Okay,
no.
So, you know, we went there specifically for Bach. I think it was an anniversary or something of that sort back then. And we had some free time. I was walking around. I saw the Mendelssohn House. Mm. And so it's a beautiful house that's just right across from Gewand House, where the great orchestra plays in Leipzig. And I got to spend some time there. His family was very wealthy, and they had their own recital hall right in the home. Mm. And so I was able to go there and look at the piano and just sort of like absorb all of that as well. So I think, oh, this is... These are the floors and the walls that house the Mendelssohn family. What I noticed about the orchestration is how perfect it is compared to his earlier symphonies. He's so careful about writing balances right into the score. So if he wants a solo and a wind instrument, he'll write forte, but the rest of the orchestra will have mezzo forte. Most composers didn't do that at that time. And also just string-wise, it's so much more playable than, say, like the third or the fourth symphony, which are crazy virtuosic pieces. His final symphony, and he composed it for the 300th anniversary in his day, and it has such a powerful message. It's almost a sort of a spiritual journey. When I'm conducting the piece, it feels like he's telling us his own personal story as it goes along until it ends with the Martin Luther chorale theme of Ein Feste Burg, A Mighty Fortress Is Our God. So it's a great symphony.
first part of the program, the Rimsky-Korsakov, the Russian Eastern Overture. Tell me a little bit more about this piece. I know it was inspired partly by his memories mm-hmm. of Easter following a Russian winter. So it was that explosion of color and celebration after a pretty hard time that he's marking.
Yeah, we can kind of imagine that living here.
Yeah.
Rimsky-Korsakov has no original ideas of his own in the overture. He's taken everything from the liturgy growing up in Russia. And so like all these melodies, even Russians today would recognize these melodies right away. Mm-hmm. So for example, in the middle, he keeps coming back until the very end to the Christos voskrese smertvix smertius mer poprafisus chimborobic jivo darovav. And that keeps coming back until the very end. He quotes at the beginning a psalm tone. And so everything is so clever in the way that he's put it together. And then he has a masterful orchestral technique to it. Mm-hmm. To top it off. So everybody gets a solo in the orchestra. So there's a huge second trombone solo that happens right in the middle of the piece. There's flute solos galore. Violin solos are very prominent. Cello solo, clarinet, you name it. Mm-hmm. Some instrument has a big time solo throughout. I spent a number of different visits guest conducting in Russia, and St. Petersburg just sort of happenstance. On one of my visits, I was going around a corner, and I saw the Rimsky-Korsakov house written in Cyrillic. I know enough Russian that I'm dangerous. and I said, I have to go to this place. Well, went up to the second floor, and it's a huge flat. And the lady curator who is running the museum for Rimsky-Korsakov, there's nobody in there. Mm-hmm. And so I paid my entrance fee, and I came across his desk, and on his desk was a final score that he was working on. And he was sort of a superstitious man, so he had a golden pen and he had to write things very specifically, very clean score. So I asked the lady, I said, can I sit here in this desk? And she said, yes, you may sit. And I said, can you take my picture? She said, yes. 50 rubles, please. I always think of this, you know, just like that puts me in that area.
Thank you.
sets the stage beautifully for Richard to come on.
For the Shostakovich.
From Shostakovich's Piano Concerto Number 2.
And my background's Eastern European. And so then we had this offer to Richard Steinbach to join us. And we talked about programming for that. And it's sort of a journey. So you go from Rimsky-Korsakov to the Shostakovich Second Symphony and then Mendelssohn. It's a great contrast. There's not a weak piece on the program.
And this is a piece you've been working on before, or is this, did you?
It's basically a new piece for me. Christopher and I went back and forth a little bit on, you know, which concerto would be programmed, and then I think kind of a light bulb went off simultaneously for both of us when we got came up with the Shostakovich, and it's just such a delightful work. It's not performed that frequently. And it's just sheer genius of writing. So it's, yes, I've been working, I guess we planned this a year ago, so I've been working with Shostakovich for an entire year, and I just love every part of it. Thank you. The first movement and the third movement, driving rhythms, lots of humor, and the middle movement is probably one of the most gorgeous slow movements that I have ever heard or played. Mm-hmm. Dark, warm, and it's just, there's something very spiritual about it that's just incredibly touching.
I would say that Shostakovich's voice is the same in this concerto as it is in almost every piece I've conducted or heard, which is that there's a sense of irony there's something underneath the surface. So even though the first movement is joyful, there's definitely mm-hmm. a little bit of sarcasm involved, mm-hmm. and it's only in the second movement where I feel like you're getting pure, like. Emotion and expression from Shostakovich.
Absolutely, yes.
That last movement is torturous, you know, as far as rhythms and all the different sort of circus stunts that he tries.
Yes, a lot of the last movement is in 7/8 meters, so it's just a very, very quirky, but delightful, mm-hmm. and as you said, kind of circus. Thank you. then, of course, he wrote this concerto for his son, Maxime. And he talks about in the last movement, the piano solo part goes into these exercises, which were written for the pianist with no Hanon, the Hanon exercises. And he said that he put that in there because it was the only way he could get his son to practice his piano exercises at the Hanon. And it is, just all of a sudden he goes into, and it's just kind of delightful, constantly changing keys and these piano exercises.
That's wonderful. I hadn't heard that.
It's very comical, I think, effect in a sense.
I like how that reveals a father-son relationship.
Yes. Sort of and they were both really virtuosic pianists, both father and son Maxime. So it is definitely a challenging.
Yeah. And the recordings they've made of this piece are very fast.
Yes.
Extremely fast. Right?
Sometimes I think too fast, because you don't have enough time to digest, you know, the content of the music. So
with the Shostakovich, I mean, what you're saying about how, you know, he starts off with it and then he changes, he kind of reveals himself in the second part. That seems true of Shostakovich's career. He really, he's hard to pin down, but it makes sense that he's hard to pin down because he was working in difficult circumstances. The composers that stayed in Russia at the time, they often pretty much did what was necessary to they compose in the way that they needed to compose, but he wasn't so easy. I mean, he didn't really capitulate to anybody necessarily,
or to everybody. It's hard to explain. He had to play such a political game. He lived in this large house in the middle of Moscow that was for the intelligentsia, the people who had any kind of like intellectual educational background that were important figures in Russia. And he was always afraid that he was going to be nabbed by the KGB at some point. He had his valise ready and packed if he had ever had to leave his family, his wife and children, because he knew that there was a danger of that happening all the time. So some of his pieces, he uses the KGB. And you can hear it. He quotes it all the time. This is the one piece where he doesn't do that. there's such dark times, and that oppression is so heavily felt in his music. Mm-hmm. Somebody in the orchestra said to me that he must have written this piece after Stalin died, which is true. It's about true. 8 years.
Yes.
And because he said, because it's so happy in comparison to, say, like if you heard his Sixth Symphony or some of those earlier symphonies, for sure. There.
Under Stalin, so, yes.
Yeah. So dark.
I think that's significant. Did you work with one of Shostakovich?
I was gonna say, like, with all the composers, I've had like a personal contact with every single piece on the program. I mean, the composer of each piece, like, I have to say it's sort of like 2 degrees separated. But I as a young conductor, I participated in master classes in Russia, and I studied with Ilya Musin for a few master classes, which were absolutely wonderful. Ilya Musin was a great conducting teacher. Taught Valery Gergiev, who's the sort of the king of conductors today in Russia. And Ilya Musin was a colleague of Dmitri Shostakovich. So he always liked to pepper all of his instructions about when I knew Dmitri Shostakovich.
That's great.
He talked about his first symphony that he composed, and he was playing this. He wanted everybody to come, all of his friends from the conservatory, to come together, and they're all going to play this, hear the forehand arrangement of Shostakovich's first symphony. And from that point on, they knew he was a genius.
Yeah, that's the point. Not easy.
Considering your next season, I'm sure you're deep into.
Yes, for audience members who are listening, and they absolutely owe it to themselves to hear Richard play. He's just an amazing artist. It's fun to watch him. He has one foot in the old world and the new world, because he's such a consummate musician and artist. At the same time, he uses this large iPad to play the music so that he doesn't have to turn pages and everything. So I admire him. I need to get into the 21st century with you, my friend.
That is something that changed my life when the technology came out, and especially the Bluetooth pedal for changing pages. It's just seamless and absolutely.
Really? There's a pedal that's connected to it by Bluetooth, and that's how you...
Yeah, so the you don't have to turn pages at all, and there's no page turners. If anyone who has worked with a page turner or anyone who has been a page turner knows that it's a nightmare from either end, and inevitably something goes awry, and so it just eliminates all that, and the technology is quite... quite amazing.
That's fascinating. In a way that most people wouldn't expect technology to enter into performance.
Yeah.
I think. So, and
so, oh, I, go, I'm sorry. No, please. I was going to say, to follow up, come hear Richard play, and then we're going to have during the intermission a reveal of our new season. So I'm not allowed to say anything before this.
That's as much as you can say.
Of course. Yeah, this is my very first time that I've had the opportunity to perform with NYSO, and I'm very thrilled. It's, of course, a wonderful space and excellent program. I mean, I'm really excited to be part of the program and to work with Christopher and the orchestra. So I hope a lot of Siouxlanders will trek north just a bit and join us on Tuesday evening.
Yeah, it's not far, and Sioux Center Dort College is a wonderful place to visit. It's a great place.
And the weather is supposed to be very nice, like 50 degrees.
My goodness! Yeah, get out the sunscreen.
Exactly.
and what's on your docket? What's ahead for you, Richard? As the M.A. Martin Everest Foundation?
Yes, this is actually the third and final year of this Artist in Residence project. And so this concert with the Northwest Iowa Symphony Orchestra, and then I have another solo concert 5 days later in central Iowa, in Algona, Iowa. Okay. They happen to have just opened a year ago a $5 million state-of-the-art performing arts center, the Wilcox Performing Arts Center, with a brand new 9-foot Steinway. And so I'm doing a concert there right after this concert. And so if any of the listeners know people in the Fort Dodge or Algona area, it's Sunday, April 15th.
What will you be performing for that?
Well, I'm doing a variety of things. I'm doing the big work is the solo version of the Warsaw Concerto. And then I'm doing some, it's a very eclectic program. I'm doing some jazz fusion, some Chick Corea from this fusion album that I just released. And then some hymn tune arrangements. And then I'm also, one of the things on this Artist in Residence program, the focus has been to go into communities throughout the region and perform concerts, and then also work with young musicians doing master classes and so on. And when I've done that, I have collaborated with local artists. So there's a young man in Algona, north of there, who's just an incredible pianist. He's 19 years old, so he's going to play on the program, and we're going to collaborate on the Brahms Hungarian dances for four hands, and one of the high school choirs, the Bishop Garrigan High School Choir, singing, and then another local singer.
Well, I thank you both for coming in today, making the trip to Sioux City, and talking about this program, which is happening on Tuesday, April 10th at 7:30 p.m. in the B.J. Hahn Auditorium.